Hello, hello, and welcome back, or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and we just keep going forward here in season two. I'm really enjoying all of these conversations. We're exploring the idea of what does it mean to be human? And then ideally in season two, we're giving tools or answers to go chase that, whatever you believe it is to be human. I believe it means to go for it and play big and take risks and all of those elements. And I think a lot of the people we've interviewed have shared potentially similar belief, but seen it from a totally different lens. Today's guest is phenomenal. She works behind a lens in her, for the majority of her career now. Her name is Sarah Hirsch-Bordeaux, and she is a gifted, I think one of the most gifted filmmakers of my lifetime. And I think her work is going to speak for many, many lifetimes as this thing continues on, this journey of life here. And she's founded a production company called Women Rising. She founded it in 2013 after she was told by a female coworker that you belong more in an apron than in an office. And just pause on that for a second. Sarah was working and has worked at Paramount. She's been the VP of digital marketing at MGM Studios. She was the CEO and co-founder of a company called Now Live that got acquired in 2013. And then she started her real storytelling career as a director and a producer. We met when she produced an event called TEDx Women in Austin. It was a TED event that I was really lucky to be a speaker at. And we talk about it in the open of this thing as we kind of explain, our memory of how we first met. But to be around her as a producer of that event, I got to watch her and didn't know her at all, really own an event. And TED is a huge brand, clearly a global brand that we all are very well aware of. But she had to manage all the speakers, all the production, all the in-house elements of it, all of the guests. And she just, acted like it was just another day on the job. And, if you've been around people at high levels, there's a lot of stress involved. And from that moment on, I said, whoa. Whatever she's involved in, I'm going to make sure I pay attention to. And if any opportunity to do something, behind her, beside her, whatever the role would be, I was going to jump at it. And I guess you have to watch her continue to evolve and grow. From that TED Talk, if you can remember the Lizzie Velasquez TED Talk, it went crazy, viral almost instantly. And that launched the first film that Sarah directed called A Brave Heart. It was about bullying. And she flew all over the world and really dove into the idea of bullying and allowed us to see it in a different light and celebrate Lizzie's story throughout it. The next project, I had a chance to be an executive producer on with her, a film called Protector. It's an educational documentary series, really the first of its kind, and its goal is to redefine manhood and redefine how we talk and educate in the locker room and remind student athletes, men specifically, that they can be the cure to ending sexual violence instead of the problem. And it's been a project very near and dear to my heart, and to watch her go through it and celebrate Alexis's journey and Alexis's path was amazing to watch. It's a beautiful piece, and it'll be linked, obviously, in the show notes and in the blog post here, so you can check out that trailer as we continue to screen that film around the country. And then her most recent work is straight power. I mean, it's absolutely special. I think it's going to be a piece that will be heard from people for a really, 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 really long time. It's really amazing. It's a film called We Go Higher, and it's the first documentary by and about the kids of 9/11. And I didn't know this, but there's 3,051 kids that lost someone close to them due to 9/11. And Sarah's helping share the story alongside her team at Women Rising. It's really unique. And I think just the lens that she lives her life and in which she shares her stories is just different. You're going to hear it in the interview. You're going to hear her pause a little bit after I ask a question. You're going to be wondering, well, is there delay? There's no delay. She's just literally processing it. And as we go through about an hour-long conversation, you really get to hear a path. And I believe, because a lot of us listening to this podcast have a sports lean, she talks like a coach. She's got elements of Pete Carroll in her. She's got great competitive ideals like Jerry Rice, Larry Fitzgerald. She's got a chip on her shoulder like Tom Brady. I mean, she really, I think, is power. She's special. She's graceful. She's all the things that we'd all hope someone could say about us, I believe. So I'm going to get out of the way. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. We're going to continue to go deeper and deeper here and continue to please showcase your support and love by rating, reviewing, subscribing, as we dive into college football season and hopefully sharing some more stories about people who are going for it, like Sarah Hirsch-Bordeaux. Here we Here we go.
I'm fired up. Today, we got Sarah Bordeaux on the Life Without Limits podcast. Sarah, longtime friend. Not even sure if you listen to the podcast, but I don't even care. I'm pumped that you're on it. And thank you so much for joining. I'm really stoked.
I have listened. I'm a fan, and I'm honored.
There we go. Well said. Well said. I always enjoy starting conversations like this off with a really fun interaction and a memory from both of us.
Awesome.
So I think it's important to just kind of give the viewers a little bit when the people that are on this show and I have a relationship. So what's your first memory of us meeting? And then I'm going to tell mine and see if we meet anywhere similarly.
Oh, I like this exercise. I'm going to have to adopt this on set for new crew members. The first interaction that I remember was December the 4th, 2013. It was the arrival and rehearsal for Ted Austin Women, the first Ted Austin Women. I remember all of our incredible speakers were arriving. There was a lot of anticipation in the day. I remember being so excited to see, you know, the people that we had been prepping with arrive in Austin, first of all, and then arrive to kind of the venue and feel this energy take shape. I remember immediately turning around and all I saw was this smile. And you, like in many times where I've seen you in public, had sort of created this or had attracted this circle of people around you. I do believe that this particular circle was all adoring girls and young women. But I remember just seeing like, wow, life has really stepped into this room. And I remember thinking, I think we've got something special here. And you had kind of made a presence and you had sort of stepped on the stage just by stepping in the room.
Ooh, wow. That's, you know what? What a filmmaker you are. That's a great story. Great pacing and tempo. You nailed the moment.
Stop it.
I'll say this. My story is a little different. The first interaction is what comes to mind for me. And I got a call from our mutual friend, Alexis Jones, and, you know, we talked about the TEDx conference that you guys were creating and you were going to executive produce in Austin, TEDx Women, the story you just referenced. And so I started, I'm pumped. I'm like, I want to go do this. And I didn't realize that, like, the TED brand they've got a way about them, which is great. All great, great brands do. And they have a way in terms of how you have to prepare and present and all of those elements. And we get on our first call, and you asked some of the best questions anybody ever asked me about the story I was going to tell. And then I didn't really know what I was going to tell. I kind of had a couple different ideas. We ended up brainstorming on it. You know, we eventually netted out on the concept of love wins. And I would tell this story about my grandparents and Holocaust survivors and find some gnarly bridge to talk about high school quarterbacks and football and what I do in my, you know, my real world. And I was kind of nervous, but what you did for me is that you eased all of that. And I think that a producer's job or a director's job is to take all the chaos and unfortunately kind of put it up in your traps, like near your neck, and store it there for like some massage someday in Bali. But you got to put all that stress away and allow the performer to feel creative. And I talked to a lot of people that did TED Talks and they get so stressed and the person in your chair stresses the shit out of them. And you didn't do it. And then when we met, it was all hugs, all smiles, and you didn't make me rehearse it. And as a performer, I've loved practice. I think it's important. But in settings like this, you trusted me. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, hey, can I just do like my open? You're like, yeah, man, whatever. And I'll always love you for that initially because you didn't try to be the creative. You just tried to support the creative with your creativity. And I thought that was beautiful in terms of our first interaction.
Well, what a huge compliment. So, I think what I'll say to that is, you know, I have a history of hiring and building teams and bringing people to moments and opportunities where most of the time they don't have the resume on paper to get there. You are different. because you had all of this fantastic accolade and experience and reputation and presence, and I tend to bring together underdogs. And when I think the reason why I didn't, you know, have control issues, which I think sometimes directors and producers do about where they're placing people, I've sort of adopted the theory of I make decisions and then I just surrender to whatever they're there to bring. It makes that initial decision for me really, really important, because once I've said yes to something or come on board to someone, I really need to believe that that's the right thing for me and the right thing for all concerned. And we knew that you were one of the right, very, very, very right people to kind of be present at that moment. And I just trusted that you'll do what you do, which is, you know, create these very magical, connected, familiar moments to strangers. And that's not easily won. But you earned that. And so why not let you do what you do?
That's amazing. So we're going to dive into that. I need to follow that up. This is really unique. You know, for those of you, I talked about it in the open, but your production company, Women Rising, it's fascinating to me because you tell these really unique stories. And I want to dive into the mission here in a second. But what you just described, I don't know if you know, maybe you do, but you just described a high-performing mindset. If you dove into the psychology of the literal last comment that you said about your belief in people and how your quote is, I make decisions and then surrender. That's what Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, that's what the greatest, Jerry Rice, who I was just with last week up at Nike, Larry Fitzgerald, greatest performers, they do that. They say, you know, I'm going to bust my ass, I'm going to set everything up, and then I'm just going to let it rip and see what happens. And you're talking like Pete Carroll talks to me when we talk about, you know, the NFL or championship
really?
Environment. Yeah, I mean, I want to pivot there. Like, do you recognize that your mindset is of that caliber when you create the environments you create in all these films you guys are producing and directing?
I don't think I do. So much of the things that I've accomplished, quote, work-wise, are normally triggered or catalyzed by instinct. And, you know, I didn't go to film school. I didn't go to business school. I don't have an MBA. But I've had all of those jobs. And I think for me, I just really believe in people. And I believe in the power of the right people in the right moments. And what an honor to be for you to associate me with those kinds of legends. That's very humbling.
Well, I think it's really true. And I think that I'm going to keep going down the road, if you don't mind, because this podcast is all about exploring what it means to be human. And I think it means to go for it. And the only rule I have is ask questions that I don't know the answer to. And we know each other pretty well. So who's the first person that believed in you? And why do you think you believe in people and kind of give them that type of freedom?
So I never really loved school, but I was pretty good at working. I just liked it, and I liked doing rather than preparing for things. I think so much of beautiful students and fantastic students and, you know, are ones that really love that preparation. And that's just never really been my bag. So I graduated college with 9 internships under my belt, and I went to New York. I went to school at TCU, Texas Christian University in Fort Worth. Lived in London my junior year, worked there, came back, was just really ready to get in the game. For me, the game was just the action of working and contributing and participating. And I went for an interview, like we all do. We chase leads, right? Something comes up and, oh, you should go talk to them. And the number one lead that I had going to New York was at the Estee Lauder Company, family run organization, family run team. You know, the family members are still in the hallways. They use the same, you know, ladies' rooms and men's rooms. You're in the elevator with them, and there's a real power that comes with to the employees to recognize that they don't really have to be there. The family is doing all right. The business has done very well. But the fact that the members of the Lauder family loved contributing to continued growth and that they wanted to be a part of a business that was anchored by, you know, a family matriarch was really inspiring to me. I went in and I interviewed, and my first interview was with a woman by the name of Ann Lichter. And, you know, she sat me down and I knew someone, so that's how I'd gotten this informational interview. And she just thanked me for coming, but she said, you know, we just don't hire recent college grads. We just don't do it. And I was crushed. I had been in there about 20 minutes. I had used the ladies' room. I had sprayed the free perfume on my neck. You know, I had peeked down the hallway. I had, you know, I may or may not have, you know, stolen a free eyeshadow on a counter that I found somewhere in the waiting room and in the lobby. And I just, there was a feeling that I had, I felt like I was home. And that was a really unique feeling for me. And insights grow as, you know, as we get older, we know what feelings mean. Sometimes as we're growing up, we, you know, we kind of label the same feeling for lots of things, and that's just not real. And the dimension that comes with feelings just get broader and more prismed as we get older. At the time, I it felt new to me. And she said, you know, we just don't, I think you should go and get a job for like a year, just go get it for a year and then come back. And I said, no, I really want to be here. I said, aren't my 9 internships enough? And she said, unfortunately, no. I left heartbroken, and I called her every day for like 2 weeks and trying to get another shot. And then what occurred to me as I was walking in New York, this was like, you know, I'm 41 now. And so I had a cell phone, but it was large and heavy and fit in a backpack. And I was walking down 57th Street and I had a quarter in my pocket and I had this idea and I called her right away and she picked up and she said, Sarah, I appreciate the follow-up, but we really already made our decision. And I said, I have one question. I said, do you have to have a college degree to work in maintenance or to work in the janitorial staff? And she said, why are you asking that? And I said, because if you don't have to have a college degree or, you know, experience after school in order to get in the janitorial staff, then couldn't I come in and work my way up? And wow. She said, that's ridiculous. You have too much experience. Just go get a job and come back. And I was like, I know I'm supposed to be there. She hung up and called me back and she said, we're going to give you a temp job for 1 week. If you can hack it, then we'll figure something out. And I was ecstatic. And she did. And she gave me the opportunity. And I was hired as the youngest employee, full-time employee at the Estee Lauder Companies at that time in the company's history. And I was 22.
Wow. I just got the chills.
Well, but it's a combination, right, of timing and persistence and faith.
Yeah, and real grit.
And real grit. And I think because of that, maybe that's why I always hire the underdogs, come to think of it. I feel like I'm laying on your couch and you've got like this mahogany couch and my feet are up on a pillow and we're having a therapy session. But I think that that's why I like believing in people that maybe aren't picture perfect on paper, because none of us are being picture perfect on paper is freaking easy. That's easy because a lot of times that isn't real. But what I really love believing in people in the same way that Anne believed in me, and she left after a couple years, and I've tried to find her for a long time, and I can never seem to find her. But she was the first person that really kind of gave me that shot.
Wow. Well, if anybody knows where she is, give us a shout after listening to this podcast. We'll make sure we track her down.
Yes, please.
So we're just kind of piecing this thing together, right? And you have this amazing belief in people. You're not afraid to make decisions and then surrender. Somebody believed in you after you beat literally the door down as much as probably humanly possible at that job. And now you're a storyteller. And I kind of want to work backwards because your feature film that you're working on now is Power. It's called We Go Higher, the first documentary by and about the kids of 9/11. Now, we both know as directors of films and producers of films that one little miss-up, right? One lighting error, one audio error, one whatever, and the film is lost. And that's like 10 grand a day or whatever your budget may be. And here you are with your production company, Women Rising, backing, supporting, helping create, but not, you know, directing this beautiful film because you're believing in the kids of 9/11 to come up with this piece. Please explain how this came about and why you have such a strong commitment to this specific project.
Well, you and I worked last on a project called Protector, and through that, another Alexis moment of popping up like a beacon and a Sherpa to introductions. Alexis introduced me to a young woman named Delaney Kaleo. Delaney is now 18, and we met through Alexis about 8 months ago. And Delaney was a child of 9/11. She lost her father and two uncles on that day. To our knowledge, it seems that she lost the most amount of family out of all the 3,051 kids. And
wow.
We got introduced through Alexis, and Delaney and I got to meet, and we had an interview with Protector, and both of us having walked a similar walk with an experience. And she said to me, "I don't think I've ever felt so safe to be heard before. I wonder if we could do this for the kids of 9/11. And I said to her, first of all, I was terrified at the thought of this. And I said, "Well, let's keep talking. You know, what are you thinking?" And she said, "You know, everyone has been telling our stories about us for 16 years, but I don't think there's been anything that's been not only about us, but by us too." So we started talking, and, you know, I really founded Women Rising to kind of, in essence, positive story tell tough issues, but do them and bring those to life with female heroes. And Delaney and two of her friends, the amazing Katie and Emily, all sat in a room and came up with a whole bunch of ideas. And she called me and she sent me these ideas and she said, "What do you think?" At the moment, I was really nervous. Quite honestly, I had a kind of a stroke of insecurity around, listen, I made two films. I didn't go to film school. I've, you know, won some prizes, yes, at film festivals, but, you know, I don't know if I'm worthy of shepherding this film because I know how much it means to the world, how much they mean to the world as these symbols of American loss and American grief. But what I was mostly excited about was to help them redefine that brand that they had on them, to be able to give them the light and to encourage them to be heard in their own ways. So a few months later, we are now filming. We started filming about a month ago. We are doing the worst possible thing from a producer's standpoint. We are raising the money and filming simultaneously. And, you know, as I've done with all of my projects, I'm personally investing in it. And I genuinely believe that We Go Higher is going to present viewers with an opportunity. I mean, if you think about it, if you're feeling like, the underdog and you just need to get back in the game, you watch Rudy. If you have, if you're about to have a baby or you're pregnant, you're watching She's Having a Baby from the 80s, or if you're about to get married, you're watching Father of the Bride. If you've got cancer or you have someone diagnosed with cancer in your life, you're watching Beaches or Terms of Endearment. But when you've lost someone and you are feeling hopeless and at the bottom, the film community hasn't really brought forward a comfort blanket in the form of a film. And I believe that power can now rest in the hands of our kids. And when I say kids, I use kids with a capital K always, as it relates to these, because they're just the teachers that this country and that, the world has the opportunity to learn from. They believe that they strongly, that they don't want people crying for them anymore. They want people to learn and be inspired because they feel they're okay. And they feel that they're strong and they feel that they're thriving, that they're making decisions that make them happy, that make their families happy, that would have made their loved one, be it mom, dad, uncle, aunt, happy. These kids are living with a very potent understanding of legacy. And the decisions that they make every day echo that frequency. And it is a real honor to be the producer that is bringing this to life. It is a real honor.
Wow. Lots of questions. And for everybody, they'll be linked in the blog and the show notes. You can go to wegohigherfilm.com to get involved, join the community, share your story, your child of 9/11, and obviously donate, support this film. You said something that jumped out to me about, wanting to tackle tough issues. What is that like? Because, this is a generalization, but sometimes we all want to see the world through a brighter lens. We want to do the filter on Snapchat where it's, you're back in the 60s. Your filter is you want to go to the dark places and explore them. You did it with the Protect Your documentary about how athletes can be the cure to stopping sexual violence instead of the problem. You did it with the Lizzie Velasquez project in that film. You've done it in everything that you've touched. I'm curious what that's like for you.
Do you know the term Kintsu Karoi?
No, but
it's a Japanese. It's a Kintsukuroi, I believe, or Kintsu Kuroi. It's basically this art form, this Japanese art form that really represents a belief that I was introduced to, and that is that it is an art form that puts together broken pottery, but does it with gold lacquer. And it represents the belief that we're actually more beautiful for having been broken. We don't learn and grow when things are easy and smooth and glossy. We learn when things are uncomfortable and painful and when they hurt. Those are the moments that make us taller and better and stronger and more wise. I'm 41, as I said, and it's been a really beautiful life so far, but it's had a lot of moments that have had to make me rise in my own way. And I'm inspired by other human beings that choose to be teachers of those moments of rising. And I don't think I set out to do this. I just sort of, you know, think that in the end, when you're creative, you're creating because you need to, and because you're feeling something, and because you have a story to tell. I don't really have ambition. You know, the difference between ambition and drive in my mind is that ambition is always about a destination. It's about a scoreboard. It's about zeros in a bank account. It's about a C-suite. It's about a corner office. It's about square footage of a house and gallons of a pool. And to me, I just never really knew where I was going. I just knew that I liked going. So for me, Women Rising and the work that I'm doing, I'm just really trying to stay present for the moments and the windows that kind of keep opening, and recognize that if they have a story to tell that I think would help someone or help someone rise in their own way, I just really want to be a part of that.
Wow. You know, as a broadcaster, I've always felt that my only job is to listen like my life depends on it. And you do that when you interview people as well, or if you're calling a game and you're listening to nonverbal communication, or if you're a partner up in the booth. But as a filmmaker, I was told this years ago by a good friend, an acting coach of mine named Bob Bancroft. And he said, when you're talking about sharing stories, share the story where your next breath literally depends on it. And I learned that in documentary filmmaking, because the ones you really love, you're up till 3-4 in the morning, like, and then up again at 6,
yeah,
and pounding coffee and haven't showered in 3 days. And I'm curious for you, why, you know, you lived in New York in a period of your time. And I don't know this, maybe you know people prior to this project that have gone through and been impacted by 9/11. But what's the reason for doing this? Because you're still on it every day. You're still up at 3 in the morning returning. I mean, you don't know any other way, Sarah. I mean, that's just your process. Why do this one outside of, clearly it's a magical story that's going to be heard all over the globe, but you don't do things for accolades. They just come and find you because your work is so gifted.
I think when I met Delaney, and I haven't said this to her, but in different ways, I guess I have. I think I just, for me, meeting Delaney and what she inside truly kind of had the power to bring forward, but was excited, but didn't know the how and didn't know how to get to know herself. You know, at the end of the day, I'm a mentor. And at the end of the day, I'm a big sister to, you know, younger girls and guys that didn't have one, just like I didn't have a younger one. And I think to me, I just wanted to champion the, I really just sort of saw this moment of, I think I'm the right one to champion her and to help, you know, kind of help with her chrysalis. I could just see that it was right there, but there was a lot of pain. And to think that, and to see with Lizzie and to see with Alexis, you know, the freedom and the inspiration that came on the other side for them by telling their story and what that was igniting in other people, I was making a bet on Delaney. And through that moment, I'm realizing of what it's meaning to these kids. And there's a readiness of stepping into their individual light. And it's coming in the shadow of what's happened in Orlando and Manchester and London. And I think that they feel very much like an army that is being called up.
Wow.
And that they're needed, and that they're really needed right now. And, you know, I still have so much to learn, but I am taking on kind of the impossible and the scary is sort of where I'm most comfortable. So for me, you know, rallying the kind of the self-mentoring and the talking, like, you know, you can pull this off. Like, you know, maybe that's why she came to you, is because you're the one to help make this happen for these kids. And, you know, every day I'm getting texts and emails from these kids that are, you know, telling their stories over the next couple of months. And there is a real sense of finding themselves through Delaney stepping into this light. And I think chain reactions and identifying chain reactions of goodness and bravery, I mean, isn't that what this whole thing is about? It's just being open to seeing them when they come. I hope that that's why, I hope that's what comes of this.
Wow. You know, I think that's really interesting, because as you referenced, you didn't go to film school, you didn't go to MBA school,
nope.
You went to TCU, but you find yourself at Paramount, you find yourself as the VP of digital marketing at MGM, you create a company that then gets acquired. Why, or did you see yourself as a storyteller? Like, did you want to do that? You know, what was the bridge like to say, okay, yes, in marketing every day, when I come into these big, you know, corporate meetings, I have to tell a story. I'll get that. But when did you verbally say to yourself or make that quiet affirmation in your, you know, in your early, like, alone time in the morning or whatever it is, and say, you know what, I'm actually going to produce and I'm going to create the content instead of creating, you know, a deck around somebody else's story?
I think it probably, you know, I was told by a female boss once that I belonged more in an apron than in an office. And that's when Women Rising was born. I just didn't really understand, you know, in the story of being a woman in a lifetime, why we would spend pages, you know, tearing each other down. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me. And at the time, I just really wanted to be a part of women helping each other stand taller and go higher, rather than allowing our own insecurities and our own feelings of being threatened take away from the opportunity of actually being inspired and helping each other up. You know, men compete in very specific ways, in specific forms, in specific places, with specific time frames, right? You know, when you're done, someone's won, lost, y'all pat each other on the ass as you're walking off. You take a shower and then it's like a clean slate. You might have residual upset, but it doesn't define you. And you get back on the horse because you know you have another game the next day. women don't compete with that formality. We compete in a much more emotional landscape. It's for the look of a guy or the attention of a father, or, you know, we judge ourselves if we're pretty enough and have the right outfit. Those things don't go away. They just graduate as we get older. So the emotional competition is this toxic fluidity. It doesn't end and shut off. And if we don't acknowledge what that does to the way that we make decisions for ourselves, for the women that we are around, we actually start recognizing that it becomes like what we breathe. And I really wanted to be a part of, you know, Alexis and I are always saying, you know, you can't become what you haven't seen. And to me, when I was told that I belong more in an apron than in an office, like, you know, I really think I was just so hungry for a mentor and hungry for someone to champion me, that I've created opportunities to champion these other women. And it's come in these different forms of experiences. And, you know, it came in the form of me directing the rally at the Women's March of Texas in January, and these films, and hopefully I'm just at the beginning.
I mean, it's really fascinating. I mean, when you just kind of look at some of the stuff you've done, you know, you referenced the Women's March. I went to the one in LA, and all of a sudden I see your Instagram, and I was like, of course she's producing that. Like, why wouldn't you? You should, right? The Lizzie Velasquez story of the film called The Braveheart qualifies for an Academy Award based on a TED Talk that you produced that got over now, I think it's like 11 plus million views, not 1,000, but million. You've gone to the White House. I think you called Joe Biden Uncle Joe. I mean, you've done a lot of cool stuff. But I'm curious, because a lot of us have this moment. My friend, he calls it the brink of midnight moment. It's kind of the space between one moment and the next. And here you listen to a coworker tell you that you belong more in an apron than in an office, to use that quote. In that space between when her sentence hits period and you start Women Rising, what is that like? Like, is it instantaneous? Like, you go home and buy the domain? Like, what happens in your mindset?
No. I believe that in order to, you know, for a lot of us, you know, what follows a breakdown is a breakthrough. And, you know, similarly to kind of the being more beautiful for having been broken, I am so grateful that she said those words to me. I wish that they didn't have to be said, but they were. And now that they have been, I think it comes time to recognizing that there are breadcrumbs that start to be dropped, that if we pay attention and we make decisions on the breadcrumbs, good for us. If we don't see the breadcrumbs, then they start to, these messages can kind of start coming in whispers.
Mm.
If we don't listen to the whispers, then they start to get a little bit louder. And then if we haven't listened to them, they normally come with a bang. And that can be something physical. That can be an injury. That can be an insult. That can be humiliation. That can be a real slap. And I think to me that message was it had to hurt before it was inspiring to me. And a lot of times, and lately, you know, these things happen all the time where it's like, oh, mother, like, why did that have to happen? And then you look at it and you think about it, you try not to take it personally, and it's really hard not to. And you let it take it, you know, you take it personally for a second. Then you acknowledge that, you know, if you believe in the four agreements, you know, that a lot of these things that happen, they're not personal. They're just happening. So if they're happening, what do we do on the other side of that? Do we absorb it? Do we hold it? Do we choose to hold that louder than we hold of what's possible in a way of breaking through? And I think that our lives are really just a series of rebounds, and some people are quicker to rebound than others. You know, it's very relevant to, you know, one of the themes that I keep talking about as it relates to We Go Higher is that, you know, the seven stages of grief, they're a concept. They don't happen in the same order for everybody. They don't happen in the same volume. They don't happen at the same frequency. You know, these are ideas of things, and but everyone experiences them differently. But the tenets are the same. The how you rebound, how you choose to rebound, how you absorb the bad, let that taint you, versus choose to just let it, to look at it, acknowledge it, thank it for coming along, and then let it go. And knowing that how active our choices can be. Because in the end, you know, you can either sort of blame world, life, universe, God, coach, player, colleague, you can blame all of that for what happens to you. But really what it comes down to is, what do you choose to do next? Mm-hmm. And I think that acknowledging the responsibility that we have as human beings to actually practice choice and take responsibility in those choices, that's when you know that you're actually growing in the right way. Acknowledging that, you know, wow, I actually rebounded super fast. Fuck yeah, good for me. You know, it's an acknowledgement of ourselves. And sometimes we have to coach ourselves a little bit, right? Because not everybody's always watching.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so a couple more. I don't want to take up too much of your day. But what really strikes me in an interesting way is that, you know, you just talked about Women Rising, kind of the impetus of that moment. And these films, you know, to quote your site, create content and experiences to empower women and girls. And I've been in every one of your films for the most part, and I've been around alpha males at a lot of your films. What's it like to create a company knowing that, I mean, you gave a voice, a loud voice, or a louder voice, or another different mm-hmm. platform to Lizzie, to Alexis, to now Delaney, mm-hmm. and the other individuals mm-hmm. involved in that story, obviously, as well mm-hmm. as your team and yourself. But I've seen it in real life with high school alpha males, with collegiate student athletes, with men my age, sitting down and watching the Lizzie, Braveheart, the Lizzie Project in Hollywood, with no one I knew, just watching how people observed it, having conversations with guys. I've seen it, obviously, with Protector, touring it around the country, with, you know, big-time college football players watching it. And I mean, clearly you're aware of the impact on them, but do you recognize how big it is, and that, like, it's kind of like you make your focal point is going to be, okay, I'm going to empower these women and girls and share these unique stories and this content, but you're blowing the doors off of dudes, because all we want to do is understand how women work. I mean, we have no clue, and these stories help us in a lot of ways.
Well, first of all, you know how it is. We rarely get to hear how our films affect people, because at the end of the film, most folks are greeting the star of the film, and that's the way, you know, that's the way it should be. So, I'm grateful to you to say that that's how that the films affect you. What I love that more than half of the kids that are going to be on screen of We Go Higher are men. I think that in the end, we really are all on just the same journey, and that's just the experience of being a human being. And we're all just trying to understand each other better. I think that we have a lot of areas in life that hurt and that are wrong. And for me, I don't really want to be a part of negative focus. I really want to be a part of solution-oriented journalism and filmmaking and bringing forward things that make people feel good. Because in the time that we're in, from digital media addiction to what's happening on the news to the discouragement that's, you know, that, that our country is kind of in feeling right now, but we're also in a very powerful moment of individual uprising. And that inspires me in a huge way. So if these films catalyze, trigger something in someone for one moment, you know, if I never hear about them from anybody, which I hope I do, because, you know, I'm a human, and it makes me feel good to know that I've brought something forward that's eased someone in some way or made someone feel good or given them an insight on the date they're having the next night. then what a gift, you know, I can't imagine a better, a dreamier legacy for myself than knowing that I actually made people feel something. And that feeling was one that made them feel more whole and more complete.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Last couple, I'm going to get you out of here. This is a pure selfish question. And I think filmmakers and storytellers are going to appreciate it. As we've done this interview, we're not seeing each other, but I can hear your process of like literally absorbing every word. I'm curious, so curious what your process is when you get asked questions or come across information.
I don't know, because I'm really nervous. All these things make me nervous. You don't make me nervous, and that's why I said yes to being on your podcast. But most people and situations and things make me nervous. I think...
Because you deal with a lot of information all the time.
I do. I do deal with a lot of information all the time. Everything always has to feel good before it sounds good. And I'd like to think that I'm staying in the authentic place that's for me and building stories from that, that the intention is the right one. You know, I think it's just being really aware of your compass and knowing what your game is. I remember at Paramount, people would come in and pitch all the time for businesses and, you know, to advertise with them and spend money on them for marketing. And, you know, they'd come in and they'd kind of look like a company, but then they'd sort of, it would look like it was splatter painted and by word and image with all these other brands that kind of looked familiar. And I remember saying to them, and I ended up consulting for some of them, it's like, you actually are intrinsically more powerful than you're letting on. You're just trying to play someone else's game. Don't play anyone else's, play yours. You know, if you have something that's authentically supposed to stand the test of time, then it has to be ownable and it has to be convincing to you first. I think that honestly, Yogi, and it's like you and like this, like the incredible, inspiring work that you do, which I refer to all the time when I'm on set, like, I hope Yogi would like that, because I genuinely believe that you have a compass that doesn't waver, and that's inspiring to me. So if that comes across in the answers that I share, then hot.
You're such a coach. You don't even know it. You're, I mean, play your game. Don't worry about the opponent. I mean, you're a straight up ball coach right now. So
am
I'm gonna
I?
Ask you
God,
are.
God, I could be making so much more money.
I love it. All right, last couple of questions. I'm going to get you out of here, and these are quick hitters. So first thought, first reaction. Love to know, okay. Sarah, what makes you feel most alive?
Sunshine. And horizon lines.
And good lighting.
No, horizon lines. Vast spaces.
Possibility. Okay. Very amazing. If you had to describe what a full life is for you, how would you do that?
Wow, what a full life is. I would probably describe it with, you know, as many meaningful seconds as you're allowed.
Amen. What are you seeking?
Acceptance, peace, presence.
Okay. And then lastly, we ask everybody on this podcast the same final question, and it's, how do you feel about the word limits?
I don't know how to spell it.
Amen to that. Well, Sarah, this has been awesome. I mean, honestly, I've been really looking forward to it. Yogi, you're so fun.
Let's do this every day.
Done. I support it. Let's go. But seriously, what a great story. There's so many takeaways. Number one, you're a ball coach. Somebody believed in you and you believe in them. I mean, I literally have pages of notes and quotes. Like, you could literally be, you know, you're like an inspirational Nike poster right now. So I'm all in. Let us know.
Okay.
So for everybody that can help, because We Go Higher is a powerful film, and this needs to happen, and we need to support it. So wegohigherfilm.com. Anything else that we need to know to get involved with your latest and greatest project?
Thank you, everybody. Blessings to everyone. Thank you, friend.
All right. There it is. Sarah Bordeaux. That was awesome. Had an absolute blast with her. Really learned a ton. I mean, honest to God. What follows a breakdown is a breakthrough, right? There's a quote from, just kind of looking at my notes here in real time. Being aware of your compass of all time. You can't become what you haven't seen, what her and Alexis always say. I highly recommend you go look at her projects. I mean, so often we, you know, at least I do in the entertainment world, like, I want to tell stories. And the instant reaction is, okay, well, what kind? And I think for her, she's got such a tight lens, right, on her mission of creating content and experiences to empower women and girls. But she impacts so broadly. I mean, you're just listening to it, and whether you're female, male, let's just say you're in a corporate job that you don't feel you're right for, or you want to do something different in your life, Sarah is a perfect example. If you want to tell films around a specific concept, Sarah is a great example. She's also a great example of impacting the complete opposite target audience of what she wanted to, because the content's so good. So go to check out, please check out her content. It's amazing. Womenrising.com. You'll find everything there, from A Brave Heart to the Protector film that I was fortunate enough to be an executive producer on. And hopefully changing the game in college football and student athletes, and, you know, making sure that those student athletes recognize that they are the cure to sexual violence instead of the problem creating it. It's a beautiful story around Alexis Jones and the work she does. And then, of course, We Go Higher. I mean, I can't wait to go watch it, be a part of it. I'm going to go support it right now and donate. And as a filmmaker, I've done these campaigns before. If it's $1, if it's 10 bucks, if it's a tweet, a Facebook post, anything helps. And I got to tell you, Sarah Bordeaux, I think she is one of the most talented filmmakers of not only my time, but our time. And I think you go watch her projects and what she's done and how she's done them. And the work clearly speaks for itself. So we're going to get out of here on this one and end it as we always do on this podcast. But the only limits that we have in life, the one that's ourselves. Peace.